5:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. An advisory panel that helps shape America's dietary guidelines has released a report aimed at lowering our consumption of added sugars and salt while easing up on cholesterol restrictions.
The Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee gets together every 5 years to suggest changes to our diets, and these recommendations help shape the dietary guidelines for the United States. Things like that you might have seen, the food pyramid, the current MyPlate diagram.
In the past, guidelines have focused on low-fat diets, but that's changed this year. The panel now suggests that Americans focus on the type of fat that they're eating rather than the amount.
Beth Olson joins us now. She's associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison and an extension specialist with the Family Living Program for UW Extension. Beth, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So one of the big takeaways from this thing, it seems like, is sugar. Sugar seems like the new nutritional bad guy. Am I reading that right?
I think it's getting more press, but it has been a while that nutritionists have been concerned that the American public consumes diets that are high in refined sugar, and not just the sugar per se. We're concerned that the foods, the processed foods that the added sugar is in, aren't as healthy as whole foods that we'd like people to consume, like fruits and vegetables.
So there's, I've heard some stealth sugar going on, things that we wouldn't ordinarily think of as sugar-bearing foods. If we're buying those packaged foods, there might be a surprising amount of sugar sneaking in there.
Yes, so we tell people when they're selecting foods to look at the food label. Added sugars aren't distinguished on the label right now for sugars that would be naturally occurring. So, for instance, in yogurt, it's going to have some sugars in it from the milk, but that is proposed now to be added. And so the other place people can look on is the ingredient listing and see if it has things that would indicate that sugar has been added to the food.
Now, I focused in on one particular element here, but part of the changing messaging is, it seems like, let's not focus on a particular food or a particular bad food, but our overall dietary habits, our overall nutrition habits. What's leading to that kind of change?
That's also been something that has been coming about for years. As nutritionists, we've been talking that way, but it's becoming more and more prominent in what we're saying. And I think we learned when we talked to people about being careful about how much fat they eat, we were thinking one way for them to work on that would be to eat more fruits and vegetables. But some people interpreted that to mean all fat's bad, and if I just don't have fat, my diet is good. And so instead of getting a full-fat salad dressing, they got a low-fat salad dressing or a non-fat. One way, we're really talking about their whole dietary pattern. And so indeed, this dietary guidelines considers whole dietary patterns, as did the last one, but I think is promoting it a bit more, that it's all of our foods together that we need to be looking at and not focusing in on one thing, which might mislead us a little bit.
So can you give us the big picture, Beth? What does a generally healthy diet look like these days?
So these days, about is diets that contain a lot of fruits and vegetables, that contain whole grains. So those are grains that contain fiber, like whole wheat bread and whole wheat pastas and oatmeal, and that are have less processed foods that would be higher in the refined grains in the sugars, and that you also watch that you have nutrients that come from dairy foods, particularly lower-fat or non-fat dairy foods like skim milk. So things like calcium and potassium and vitamin D, which we often don't get enough of, that comes from that food group.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of foods are maybe, what does Sesame Street call them, sometime foods that maybe we eat too much of right now?
Yeah, so sometimes foods would be much of the processed foods, particularly those that would be high in sugars and fats and not high in other nutrients that we need. So things like cookies and candies and desserts. None of those foods are bad foods. It just means if that's the main composition of your diet, you're not going to be getting a lot of other good nutrients that you need.
So a couple other particulars that seem to be changing are from what we've heard in the past. There's the eternal debate, are eggs good for us or not? And I think some people feel a little whiplashed by eggs good, eggs bad. Where are we settling? And it seems like there seems to be more and more consensus on the egg issue.
Yes, and the committee didn't necessarily address eggs in particular. What they addressed was cholesterol, and that's how eggs got, I think, an undeserved bad rap. There was a time where we were very concerned about heart disease and high blood cholesterol levels, leading to heart disease. But we've learned over time many things in our diets contribute to heart disease. And in fact, many people can eat some cholesterol in their diet and not have an issue with their blood cholesterol or with heart disease. And with that, we've seen that eggs, for instance, having an egg or two a day isn't going to cause a problem. One of the things we don't want people to forget, though, is sometimes foods high in cholesterol are also high in saturated fat. So that would be something like whole milk or certain processed meats, perhaps. And so this isn't a license to just eat all the fat you want, because now cholesterol doesn't matter. You still have to watch your total fat. But don't focus in so much on just cholesterol, and eggs are a great source of protein.
And as I understand it, there will be some people, some percentage of the population, who are strong reactors. I don't think that's the exact phrase, but who, if they eat a lot of cholesterol in the form of eggs, may have cholesterol problems. But that can be a case-by-case basis. It's not a general rule for all of us.
Exactly. And that's something people would want to check with their health care provider. That's why your health care provider often asks about your history of heart disease in your family, so they can watch for that kind of thing and see, by monitoring your blood cholesterol, if something like dietary cholesterol is something you need to worry more about, or whether there are other things you can do with your diet to improve your heart disease risk.
Now, you've touched on this a little bit, but I want to sort out a little bit fats that are good to eat, or we can eat a fair amount of them, versus the fats not to eat. What specific foods, when it comes to the fats, should we focus on and, you know, dial back when we can?
Yes, I think the committee did a good job in saying one of the things they didn't want to tell people was just not to eat some foods. Rather, they wanted to look at what you can substitute. So what they're saying is look at the fats in your diets and look at the proportion that you're getting from saturated fats. That's going to be animal products high in fat. And think about getting some of that from mono or polyunsaturated fats. Those would be the ones more in vegetable oils. So thinking about if you're cooking with lard, could you cook with a little bit of olive oil? There's also plant products like avocados, nuts, and another category would be fatty fishes like salmon that have good oils. So the message isn't, again, to go crazy on dialing up all my fat in my diet now, but rather to look at the fat and say, let's look for some variety, include plant sources of fat as well.
We'll get into some more specific foods in a bit, but when we see these national guidelines, as you've mentioned, these are things that are constantly being reviewed by nutritionists around the country. So what kind of direction do these national recommendations give us as a society?
I think that was one of the big things that this dietary guidelines committee wanted us to think about, is we have talked for quite a while on the kinds of nutrients people need and the foods that they need, and some of that information hasn't changed. We've always said fruits and vegetables are good for you, but intakes haven't changed very much. So what more do we need to be looking at? And they really talked about how important it is for us to consider our environments and the policies that we have in place. They called it a culture of health. So let's make some of the default choices available to us, easy default choices, be healthy ones, instead of making it hard for us to find fresh, good, affordable food.
We'll follow up that point in a few minutes as we talk to Beth Olson, Associate Professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison, talking about some new national dietary recommendations that could change the way we eat.
And we'd love to hear from you. Will these new recommendations affect how you eat? Do you think these suggestions are helpful in reframing your diet? And is there anything about the suggestions that you find confusing that our guests might be able to help you answer? You can call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking about a new report that could influence America's dietary guidelines. Beth Olson stays with us. She's an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison and an extension specialist for the Family Living Program at UW Extension.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about nutritional guidelines, about what foods to up in your diet, to maybe cut back on a little bit to improve your long-term health? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to a caller. We've got Carl on the line in Madison. Carl, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to ask about, Carl?
Well, I got three things. I've got three things on my mind. Fermented grains, sauerkraut, and pork fat. My sister, who reads a lot more about this than I do, has been advocating these of late, and I'm just curious to know if these are trends that the speakers heard about.
Interesting. Carl, thanks for the call. Let's take the last first. More pork fat in our diets. Beth, I'm guessing for what you said about saturated fats earlier, that's not the trend a lot of nutritionists are looking at right now.
No, pork fat would be a saturated fat, and it wouldn't be something we would be telling people to add to their diet to increase the amount they're eating. It's fine if people are using pork as a meat protein food. We would ask them to look for the leaner cuts, so actually to encourage pork consumption that removes the fat from the pork or more so. But it is a good source of protein and fine to have in the diet. But no, we wouldn't be telling people to increase their pork fat consumption.
And then fermented foods. He mentioned sauerkraut. I've been eating more of that lately. I'm guessing there's no miracle, magical food that's going to solve all of our problems. But fermented vegetables like sauerkraut as part of our vegetable mix, is that a valid option?
I think it's a perfectly valid option. I don't think there is anything to suggest that they are healthier than other options. Now, the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Panel was still very concerned about the amount of sodium people consume, and fermented foods can be pretty high in sodium. So that would be something someone would want to check on a label of something like sauerkraut to see how much sodium it contains.
Another food that powers us here at Public Radio, coffee. I know the guidelines tackled that a little bit. What's the word on our beverage of choice here?
What the guidelines advisory group determined was that the amount of coffee that many people typically consume, that was 3 to 5 cups or about 400 milligrams per day, didn't have, as far as they could see from the research, any adverse health effects. And in fact, they suggested there might be some benefits to consuming some coffee for particular diseases. I don't think that they are encouraging people who don't drink coffee to start in order to try to improve their health, but saying it is certainly something that can be incorporated into a healthy diet.
So as long as we're not guzzling pots and pots of coffee a day, we can feel fairly comfortable with a moderate coffee intake.
Exactly.
All right, let's get back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Melissa is with us now in Madison. Melissa, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Melissa?
Hi, yes, I'm calling because I was recently diagnosed with gluten intolerance, and I was wondering how I can get whole grains in my diet if I can't eat gluten.
Oh, that's interesting, Melissa. Thanks thanks for bringing that up. Beth, a lot of people concerned about gluten, a lot of people with real gluten intolerance problems. What are the whole grain options out there for them?
Yeah, there are other options. I think gluten is high in wheat, and we have a lot of products in our diets and the American diet that use wheat, whole wheat breads and things like that. And so there are alternative sources, and one of those would, for instance, be rice. And so that's why you do see a lot of products that are being made now, instead of being made with wheat, are being made with rice. But it's fairly easy to go online now and look for products. And look in the ingredient listings or find out those grains. What is important to know is now there are standards that are coming out for how those, particularly processed products, are produced. And for the labeling of them, in order to say that they have no gluten, and that will enable customers greatly, because for some people, even a tiny amount of gluten can be a problem. And this way they can be sure that the product they're picking that says gluten-free actually is gluten-free. The other important thing to remember is if you think you have a problem with gluten but you don't know, you should talk to your healthcare provider. You don't want to cut out a category of foods if you don't need to. And if you're having other symptoms that you think are related to gluten, but they're from something else, you would want to know that.
And with rice, brown better than white, I'm guessing?
Yes, brown would have the natural bran on it, so it would be high in fiber. One of the nutrients that the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee noted we are, many of us are low in our diets is dietary fiber. It's important for our GI tract to work well, for chronic disease prevention, and the foods that it comes with, the whole grains and other products, have other nutrients that are important for health as well.
A big question, when we see these national dietary guidelines, do they change our behavior? You mentioned we've known for a long time more fruits, more veggies, a good thing, but we're not necessarily putting that into action. So do we need to change how these messages get out to us?
I think that we do, and I don't know that we yet know how to do that. The committee did make many, many suggestions related to how we could help enable those behavior changes. So the committee not only talked about what people should eat or watch in their diets to improve their health, they gave some strategies they feel are effective for people to implement those changes. For example, one of those was consume family meals. But then they also talked about the policy and environmental changes, as I mentioned before, that we should have put in place to make healthy options easier for people. So I think a very big recognition that behavior change isn't just about telling people something. It's about helping them figure out how to do it every day.
Well, let's see if I've learned the lessons here from this conversation. Takeaways, cut back on the sugar, boost the fruits and vegetables, dial back the saturated fats a little bit, but some of the lean fats, low-fat dairy, eggs, olive oil, not so bad.
Yeah, exactly. And look at your whole dietary pattern instead of focusing in on just one or two things.
Well, Beth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Beth Olson, Associate Professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison, talking about some new dietary recommendations that could change the way we eat.